Good evening. I am Francesca Edwards, the 2009-10 Student Senate President, and I would like to welcome you all to the Fall 2009 Town Hall Forum. We appreciate you all joining us this evening, and we hope that all your questions are answered during our discussion. I would also like to remind you all that this forum will be recorded for future use, and it will be posted on our website as in the form of a podcast. I would also like to remind you all that we will have a reception immediately following the forum, and we hope that all of you will join us. I realize that we have several important people to introduce, but first I would like to turn it over to Brunella Riddell to introduce the SGA Exec Board.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to start off by recognizing the Student Government Association's President Dana Manning and her executive board. Now, I'll also be introducing Senate's executive board as well, and the senators representing the various colleges here at TWU. Leading off with Senate's Executive Board, our President, Francesca Edwards. Myself, President Pro Tem, Brunella Riddell. Secretary, Kathy Lee. Our Treasurer, Ashley Willis. Student Affairs Chair, Crystal Archie. Academic Affairs Chair, Chantel Hill. Our Publicity Affairs Chair, Janet Gonzalez. And I'd like to also introduce our Senate's advisor, James Renfro. Okay. With the senators with the corresponding colleges, just please acknowledge yourself simply by raising your hand when I call the college. Okay. Oh my goodness. College of Arts and Sciences. College of Nursing. College of Health Sciences. College of Professional Education. Graduate School. Our residential senators, our commuter senators, and our non-traditional senators. And now our Publicity Affairs Chair, Janet Gonzalez, will now introduce our distinguished panel.
Hello everyone, I'm Janet Gonzalez, Senate Public Affairs Chair. This evening I will be introducing our distinguished panelists. We will begin with Dr. Kay Clayton, Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs. Dr. Richard Nicholas, Vice President for Student Life. Rob Placido, Associate Vice President, Information Technology Services. Chief John Irvin, Director of Department of Public Safety. Ron Tarbutton, Director of Physical Plant. John Sisick, Director of Fitness and Recreation. Kenneth Mock, Assistant Director of University Housing. Kyle Bowles, Director of the Student Union. Colleen Williamson, Interim Director, Center for Student Development. Annie Phillips Newton, Assistant Director of Commuters and Distant Education Student Services. John McRae, Director of Aramark. And we would also like to thank Heather Speed, Dean of Students, and Dr. Judy Bean, Associate Vice President for Undergraduate Studies, for being here with us this evening. Thank you. And now we will have Senator Zachary that will be introducing the forum. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Senator Zachary, and I will be explaining to you what a town hall forum is. A Senate town hall forum is a forum that is created by a platform to exchange dialogue between students and the experts that represent TWU, which is on the panel today. Take this time out to constructively ask questions or issues that may be on your mind that can help the university as a whole. And I would like to take this time out on behalf of the Senate to ask you to govern yourselves accordingly, and thank you. Now, next up, we will have Senator Ashley and Senator Crystal, who will be our moderators for this evening, question and answering. Thank you.
Hi. Let's get started. Does anybody have any questions? Go ahead. What's up?
Yes.
Sure.
I wanted to ask again, I think we ask every year, but any progress being made or just in general towards a more comprehensive campus-wide recycling program?
Repeat the last.
The question was. Okay, sorry. A more comprehensive campus-wide recycling program. I know there's been different steps made, and that's great. But just a more comprehensive campus-wide recycling program.
Okay, I'll do my best to answer that for you. Actually, we are making a lot of progress behind the scenes right now. We're currently in a paper-only recycling program in certain areas, mostly the offices, but now we're on the verge of being able to go to what we call a single-stream recycling, which is glass, aluminum, plastic, cardboard, as well as paper. And we're, as quickly as we can get organized and get it rolled out, we've done a lot of research with the city of Denton, which will be the recycler gatherer for us. So you'll see significant changes rolling out very soon, and including in the dormitories and throughout the student union and many places where it does not presently exist at all, even in paper. So you'll see a rapid and large expansion. So we're very happy to report that.
Who's next? Okay, I'll go ahead and Crystal, do you want to read one off?
Sure. Can Pioneer Hall be open longer hours for dance students?
These are all questions submitted online or to us the people who gathered them at meet and greets in the union and things.
Well, I ask Dr. Penny Hanstein this question since she is the director of the School of the Arts and the dance program and dance department comes under her. So I asked her about this and her response was that as of a couple of years ago, Pioneer Hall is no longer open on weekends for rehearsals. This was due to a cost-saving measure. It's expensive to heat or air condition a building, and you have to weigh the cost versus the fiscal cost versus the benefits, and the utilization is relatively low. She said it also, the way the building is constructed makes it impossible to open the two dance studios without opening the entire building. So you can see that you would have a security issue as well as the heating and cooling aspect of opening up that whole building just for the utilization of the studios. That was her response to that question. And Richard, do you want to add to that? Or John? Okay.
Well, one of the reasons Pioneer Hall has been closed for weekends is partially my fault because I guess I was the one who kind of drove that one, because we used to have it open for a few hours on Saturdays and Sundays in terms of the indoor pool. Basically, that was the only thing that we had open on Saturdays and Sundays. But the issue was, like Dr. Clayton mentioned, is when you open just the pool, you open the entire building, which means you as a student can go anywhere in that building in terms of the stairwells, restrooms, locker rooms, any place in that building, and if something happened to you, we'd never know. Because there are so many places to hide in that building that we can't see, and it's not worth having 20 staff members patrolling the building constantly so that two people can go swim, which is what we'd have to do to secure it. So, recognizing that there's a security issue, my vote at the time was it's not worth staying open for that and risking something happen. Now, in terms of that building is also a shared facility. So looking at it just Monday through Friday, because one of the questions we had was about open recreation, which is in my area. There's a lot of users in that building, and there's a lot of priorities. There are academic classes that go on, and obviously, since that's what we're here for, that's the first priority. Second major user in that building is athletics, and that's the second major priority. And the third is kind of fitness and recreation and everybody else. And that's okay, because we have to be here for academic classes first. But, like in my case, we only have between 9 o'clock at night and 11 o'clock at night to program our activities in that gymnasium, because at the beginning of the day you have academics, after that you have athletics, and we have that little part that's left between 9 and 11 at night. And during that time, we open the gym up so people can play basketball, people can play volleyball, and so that we can do our own programs and our own sport clubs in that little two-hour block. This was one of the reasons we wanted to build the new fitness and recreation center, so that we didn't have these kind of limitations. But the dance department's affected by this too, because a lot of other groups would like to use those classrooms as well. So anybody makes one change in that building, it has ripple effects for everybody.
One more question for you. We have the fitness, when will the fitness center be open, the new one?
Best answer that I can give on that is the one I've been saying for a while now, which will be spring or summer of 2011. And I can't give a better answer than that, because we haven't broken ground yet. And once we break ground, the clock will start ticking and I'll know a little more, provided there are no weird acts of God on the construction site. We've had to go through a lot of hurdles to get this done. If this was Gold's Gym, it would be open by now. But we're a state agency, so it's not. We had to get your permission. We did that. We had to go to the legislature. We did that. We had to go to the governor. We did that. Having done those things, we had to design the fitness center. That's what we've been doing for the last year. Once we did that, we had to go back to the state and get their permission to let us build it. And we did that last week. And we've still got one more big hurdle to go through. Having done all of this, we've got to get the state's permission to pay for the fitness center. And we do that in November. If all of that goes through with no issues, and we haven't had them so far, it's just a process, then we can look at breaking ground and actually building this thing after all of this is over. But that's why I don't have a better answer for you. That's why you haven't seen or heard a lot, because there's all this stuff going on behind the scenes.
Okay, the heat's off of you now.
You guys have any more questions before we ask another one?
In the student union, we have a post office, but it's only open like 2 or 3 hours each day, which if you got a class during that and you got to go to lunch after that or something, it's really hard to try and get through really quick. And is that something that the school can control, or is that just the U.S. Post Office because of its limited hours?
Unfortunately, that is nothing that we were able to control. The U.S. Post Office made that decision based on traffic patterns and number of people that were coming and the cost that it was costing them to have it staffed. We understand that it is a very limited time. Before that, it was actually closed during the lunch hour. It was closed from like 12 to 1, and so that was even more inconvenient, because that's when everybody came over, you know, to take care of business. And so they made that decision from 10 to 1. UNT was also infected with that as well. Their post office was severely decreased as well. And unfortunately, we don't have a say in that. I can give you the information that you could get in touch with somebody, you know, if students wanted to voice their concerns, and I'd be glad to pass it on as well.
And let me add to that, the U.S. Postal Service is losing $7 billion this year. They're looking for more cutbacks. While the decision for these branches, several branches in Denton, including UNT and TWU, is made by the local postmaster, we anticipate the possibility of further reductions. They're closing branch post offices all over the nation, trying to save money. Best thing you can do, I mean, you could always express your opinion to the local postmaster. Best thing you can do is go down there and buy something. They measure it by its income, and its income isn't service, although that's what we like it to be. It's stamp sales, shipping packages, post office boxes. It has to make money. And all the branches are in trouble.
Any more questions? Yes.
I have a question from the audience. A lot of commuters have an issue with parking, and all of the students have spoken to say that they are willing to pay the increased tuition for parking.
John, is that your question or mine?
I didn't understand. I'm sorry.
The question was asked that the commuter students would like more parking on campus, and they've all come to a consensus that they will be able to pay higher tuition if that's the cost of more parking. They would like to know now what is the next step they would need to do in order to have more parking on campus.
Okay. The state of Texas requires that parking be paid for by local money, the university, which means the users of the parking lot. In all cases, if the students, faculty, and staff would like to pay, you know, feel like it's necessary, but beneficial to them to pay higher prices, then that can be put into the system and be able to create more parking with this local money. Now, you know, one of the questions that usually comes up is, well, why don't you build a parking garage? Parking garages are great. They're also, they cost about $10,000 per space. They're as expensive as building a building. So if I would suggest that if the Senate wants to put together a petition and put it out to the community, and that petition is well received, and there's a lot of people that want the university to up their parking fees to be able to build parking lots and things like that, additional lots in the future, that would be great. But we're talking about a substantial increase in fees, and it's not going to happen the first year that the fees are that high.
The space where Reagan Houston Hall was taken down, the university has designated our first priority for what to put in that space is additional parking. Not designated for anyone in particular, but additional parking. The price tag to do that is over $1 million, and maybe Mr. Tarbutton can add more to that. TWU has kept one of the lowest parking fees in the state of Texas for students, and for that matter, for faculty and staff, even though faculty and staff pay more than students do. So if you do the arithmetic, what would it cost to have an extra $1 million to build that parking lot, you're talking about a substantial increase. So far, we have not received anything from student government that says students are petitioning for a higher parking fee. If you have, in fact, done that in the Senate, you need to bring it forward, but we also need to talk about how much. I mean, raising the fee $2 isn't going to get to $1 million real soon. You know, your children can park there. So and just to be honest about it, what you pay is a fraction of what it costs to run the university. Fees are controlled by the state for what they can be used for. Our appropriated money is controlled by the state for what it can be used for. And the state, speaking on behalf of the taxpayers, really don't care where college students park. That's the simplest answer there is. At TWU, we have all of our parking on campus. I think many of you know there are universities where students are not permitted to park on campus at all. So we're better off than average. As we grow, we know that is an increasing problem, but it is purely a cost problem and a space problem. We are landlocked. We have that one more location where we could add parking. We're going to try to acquire more property. But building a lot is not cheap. It is quite expensive to fix the land, to pave it, to light it, to patrol it. And Ron, am I right about the price for the Reagan Houston lot?
Yes, you are. You're in the right price range.
Now, any of you with a rich uncle who'd like to write a check for $1 million, bring it over. We'll fix it.
You have any more questions?
Actually, I do have a question. Could that be an option, maybe to have someone donate some money? I know that people donate money all the time for things. Maybe donate money for parking, because I know it does affect people. You get to class late because you can't find a place to park, and that does affect grades. You get tickets. I mean, I know that's not the biggest thing that people care about, but I mean, to help us out, because we are landlocked, it is kind of an issue for the university.
It is an issue, and it's always an option for someone to donate. And we are after donations for something all the time, for equipment, for scholarship, for renovations, and for buildings. I've been at this business at TWU and elsewhere for almost 30 years now, and there are things that people like to donate for. Parking is usually not very high on the list. It's not very glamorous. I mean, scholarships help students. Fancy scientific equipment does wonderful things. Library books and computers usually get the precedence. If there's somebody who would like to donate for the parking lot, we'll be happy to talk to them. Absolutely.
Next question.
I have another question along the lines of parking. I know that in the resident parking lot over here by Gwen and Stark, there's one space along the front row that doesn't have lines to it. I mean, it's a yellow curb, but it's obvious that it doesn't look like it's an obvious not parking spot. So is it possible to possibly paint lines there so students know that's not a space?
Okay, where are we talking about? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In the corners?
Well, not in the corner. It's not in the corner. It's on the front row.
It's in the front row.
There's a yellow curb there, but it's not obvious at night. So I'm not. There's a line next to it, but there's not a trash can like the other ones have.
Okay, basically the premise for the parking all over campus is you must park between two white lines.
There is two white lines there.
Okay, if you're parked between two white lines and the front of the curb is not yellow, then you can park there. Now, if the curb is yellow, then usually that means that is a turning problem, there's a radius problem or something like that, that people's cars will get hit.
Yeah, I know, but there's a white line there, so could it be possible for you to put lines, saying that it's clearly?
We can look at it and see. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, because I've talked to people.
We want to make it clear. I mean, we're not trying to sneak up on anybody, but
yeah.
we'll try to make it. We'll try to make it clear if it's not clear.
Yeah, it's just unclear. So,
thank you. Can we add more food choices and selections to the student union besides Chick-fil-A?
Yes.
Well, like most things on, thank you for the question, by the way, but like most things on campus, space is a premium. Right now, Chick-fil-A is the one national brand that we have located in the Student Union building. And then, of course, we have our in-house Tortilla Fresca, Grill Works, things of that nature inside. Right now, we're going to be doing a little bit of a remodel with Chick-fil-A, hopefully here pretty soon, to make it a little bit more user-friendly, to move some more move people through a little quicker. But as far as a full renovation of being able to add more outlets to the Student Union, we're probably a little ways off from that. We're in the process now of looking at what locations we could possibly do some renovations in or add additional outlets on campus to alleviate some of the stress of the Student Union. But as anybody who offices or is housed out of the Student Union knows, that that space is premium. I'm constantly trying to grab somebody's space. You leave it alone for like 2 seconds, I'm in there trying to stick something in there. But as we move forward and start looking at different options, we'll definitely be coming to the students to find out what types of food service options and additional services y'all would like to have. In fact, coming up in October, we'll be doing our survey, online survey that we do once a semester. So that'll be a good time to give us some input as well.
We have looked at other options and hope to again, but John's right. First, it's a space issue. Things like Chick-fil-A, national brands, have their own requirements for how much space, how much equipment, how much power they have, and we would not be able to add one without a renovation unless we gave up most of the other options that we're already serving in there. But we are well aware of that interest, and we hope to bring something in, but it will take remodeling, and it will start with campus-wide. We're doing work on the electrical systems. The Union is one of the buildings that needs to be reworked. The building was built in the 60s. We have remodeled several times. We have added power requirements, more computers, more equipment. We're literally to the point where we almost have to unplug something to plug something else in. And vendors, national vendors who want to put their brand name on something, aren't likely to come in until we can get that done.
When is the food station opening in the MCO?
Currently, the MCO project, and Dr. Nicholas can probably elaborate a little bit more on this. The project's been approved. I just don't believe it's had a scheduled start time yet, because there's, and Ron may be able to talk a little bit more about it as well, but the amount of projects that are going on campus, science building and things of that nature. But it's still on the horizon. We just don't really have a start date just yet.
Ron, do you want to add anything?
I don't have much more than I can add, but that's correct, as John described. I know that the project manager is assigned to work it and to advance that project, so hopefully it will be done sooner rather than later, but I don't want to make you think it's going to happen anytime very soon, but it is actively being worked now. You know, there's somebody assigned to work that project.
Just to clarify what we're talking about, for some time we've wanted another food service outlet. We have what's called a kiosk in CFO, and we're wanting to add another similar kiosk in MCL, a place for that morning cup of coffee or grab something, a sandwich for lunch for people who don't have time to come over to the Union. It will relieve some of the pressure on the garden room. It will be convenient for the people who run in and run out, for some commuters who don't have time to come all the way to the north end of campus. The project has been approved, and in our case, that means it has been funded. We have to do some final design work. We have to bid for a contract. Part of the problem for TW is we have more wish lists and more projects than we have dollars and people to do them. Projects like that with a contractor here require some oversight, requires preparation. There's some inconvenience when you have to walk around it. So it is on the list. We are hopeful that that project will start during this year. We do not have a start date because we haven't bid a contract out yet.
Any more questions?
I have a question about tuition. I know that we're in an economic recession, and so I know that schools are not getting as much funding. Now, I was wondering, is there anything being done to alleviate some of those prices for people that are already struggling? They're taking out many loans, things like that.
Well, let me try that. I'm sure glad you brought that up. The legislature met last year, and there was a lot of talk about tuition and fees and limiting tuition and all sorts of things. But you are correct, in the tough times, most universities in Texas did not raise tuition last year. TWU did not raise tuition last year. The legislature also did not provide significant amounts of additional appropriated money to universities. TWU, and it's a long story, but TWU actually has less appropriated money than it did 2 years ago. We will consider a tuition increase for next year. My own belief is that virtually every university in the state will consider a tuition increase for next year because costs are going up faster than the state's ability to assist us. Part of what is required of us and what TWU always does is have a separate forum or hearing before any tuition increase is actually proposed. The proposal goes to our Board of Regents. So you will see notices going up in early October for a hearing like that about tuition for next year. We have not actually approved a proposal yet, but I do expect we will have one shortly. We will be communicating with the student regent and with the executive branch of student government about what our plans are, and they will be involved in the hearing. The simplest answer is what you pay in tuition and fees is about one-third the cost of what it is required to operate the university. And as the state is unable to provide some of that, students and their families will be asked to pay a larger share. TWU right now is the least expensive four-year university in North Texas. We are one of the least expensive in the state, and we're being caught in that squeeze. How much and exactly how it will work, we will bring ideas and hear student comments at the hearing. And I would encourage you to attend.
Next question.
To kind of piggyback on that, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong, but the, I don't know how to say this, the library fees, if I'm correct, were raised for next semester, correct? And they're, or not the fees, but they're changing how they're, it's being appropriated now. And I was just wondering how it was decided that the library fees was chosen to receive those funds and where those funds were being used.
The library fee is being changed. The way it's going to be charged to students will be changed beginning in the spring. Right now it's a flat fee of $50. It will be changed to a fee of a per hour charge. A flat fee is, it really doesn't discriminate between whether you're taking 3 hours or 15 hours. You pay $50. The new fee will be based on a $9 per credit hour charge. The reason it was changed is because there was a statewide audit that indicated that these course fees could not be used to support any, well, it didn't, it was not ever, course fees were never allowed to be used for other things other than the course for which they were charged. At this institution, we were using some of that fee to offset costs in the library that were associated with those courses. It was determined as a result of a statewide audit that we should not continue to do that. So those portions of the course fees that were given to the library were put back, taken away from the library and put back into the course fee accounts. Therefore, that left the library with a deficit of around $270,000. So we had to make up for that. Now, we're still operating in that little bit of a deficit right now, but when the course fee goes into effect in the spring, it will help us to recover some of those costs. Costs for libraries are very high. The database management, the database subscriptions are very, very expensive, and that's most of the libraries are looking at electronic databases now, not so much hard copy acquisitions, although those are still some of the costs. To run the library that we have, we do it much more efficiently than many other universities. We have 26 doctoral programs, and we are still charging, even with the $9, far less than many other institutions that have fewer doctoral programs. And I mention the doctoral programs for a reason, because so much is involved in terms of research in those programs, along with master's programs. But the utilization now, I mean, the charges now will be based on the number of hours that a student takes. It's a fairer way to charge, rather than charging everybody $50, $50 for each semester in the summer. It will be, you know, a fairer fee, even though it will be a little higher for some students who are taking more hours. Does that answer your question?
And also, I forgot to say, the charge would be higher for nursing students?
That's a different charge. The tuition for nursing students has been increased because of the cost of offering that program. That program only will be increased in tuition $25. The nursing program, like I said, is very expensive. One of the biggest expenses is our faculty. We have to be competitive to be able to attract and retain highly qualified faculty. And because so many new nursing programs are being started in the state as well as in the nation, that there is a shortage of faculty. And when a shortage occurs, it means you have to be more competitive to attract those high quality faculty. So we have to remain competitive, and to do that, we have to be able to offer competitive salaries to attract and retain those great faculty in our nursing program. So that affects only the nursing students. Theirs will be increasing. That is correct. There will be one other increase that you didn't ask about, but I will tell you, and that will be to graduate students, and that will be increasing $5 for graduate students.
And just to clarify, that tuition increase for nursing is for the nursing courses themselves, meaning the junior level and above nursing courses.
So it's not for all of the courses. It's not just nursing students. Thank you, Dr. Nicholas, for clarifying that.
The pre-nursing students were already worried.
Right.
Other universities have already made this move because nursing is so much more expensive than a lot of the courses we teach, and others are currently considering it.
The increase in the supplement, the graduate supplement of $5, will help us to be able to offer more competitive graduate assistantships, and better pay for our graduate assistants.
Any more questions?
What would have to be done to get more washers and dryers in Starkhall?
That would be Kenny's question.
More washers and dryers in the residence halls is something that we're concerned about and that we're taking under consideration. We're looking, this coming year, we'll be recontracting our laundry vending services, and it's certainly something that we will take under advisement when recontracting that service. So, again, the numbers of machines in terms of washers and dryers is dictated by usage. Our service provider, which is Web Laundry Company, and Matt Gray, as well are able to provide us with information that they download from the machines based on usage and structure and times when they're used, peak times, low times. So it is something we'll take under advisement, and we'll be formulating a committee that will include many student leaders to sit on our committee that we'll be choosing and working with the new contract process for a new laundry vendor.
I actually have a question from the audience, and that is, where can I find more information, or and why isn't Pioneer Alert System publicized more?
Please repeat that.
They were asking for information about the Pioneer Alert System, where they can find more information about it.
The Pioneer Alert System was upgraded this fall. We've always had several ways to notify the community about any kind of emergency. They have been based on computers that are connected to the university system. They also are based on a phone system that are within the university, any phone that is in the university system. We've expanded that starting in the fall to a text system that you can register through the TW website to register your cell phone into the system, and you will receive text messages when there is some type of an emergency or some type of alert. We recommend that you do that. We have used that system, other than tests, twice, and they've both been very successful. It gets the information out very quickly. It's a very efficient. We have not found any of the carriers that have rejected that particular message, so it is delivered. We have also made the decision that these text messages would be only for emergency messages. Some universities have used those for blast emails and blast text messages showing everything from athletics to the newest dance program. People get real tired from what we have seen of getting these text messages for those types of information. So the university has made the decision that the only type of messages that will be sent out on this text system and our other message systems would be true emergencies or tests. And we test all the systems once a month.
Let me add quickly. First, part of the question was about more information. There's a big button right on the front page of the TW website. You click that and you can be registered within a few seconds. And frankly, every student should do that. And I'd also like to compliment Chief Irwin. A lot of universities jumped into various emergency alert systems right away, especially right after the tragedy at Virginia Tech. And universities spent thousands and tens of thousands of dollars of student money on a system that wouldn't work very well. There's some fabulous cases of wasted money. One of my colleagues who had spent tens of thousands at a medium-sized university logged himself on, registered with the system, and at their first test of an emergency notice, he received the emergency notice 1 hour and 4 minutes after it went out. You know, that's not very helpful if there's a fire or something of that sort. Our people, led by Chief Irwin, have studied the technology, waited for something that truly works for TWU, and found it at a much lower price. It's a good supplement to what we already have with voicemail and electronic computer notices. And I would hope every student would sign up.
This is also a way that you can know preemptively when the university is closing for weather, where you don't have to go and turn on the television and watch the scroll go over and over again until it comes to TWU or it doesn't come to TWU. We will send out any kind of closing messages when the decision is made on that system, so you will know for sure whether one campus or the other, and we divide the campuses up into Denton, Dallas, and Houston, where we can send specific messages to those particular campuses individually.
Do we have time for another question?
My understanding that the money we pay for parking decals is used for parking. So I want to know how that money is being used to take care of the problem with parking.
It is used to build parking lots. It is used to administer the program. It is used for maintenance on parking lots. We also have some parking contracts in Houston, as well as Dallas. That are the ones in Houston are independent, and they have to be paid for. We routinely work at a deficit as far as the income that's coming in from the parking system and the cost of maintaining and administering that system.
Any more questions?
I have a question about can we get more colored printers and with free print costs in the library?
I don't necessarily do the library, but I actually had three questions that are all kind of related to budget. They were sent to me prior to coming here, so I'll answer them all. They're all the same answer. So you had additional printing, additional hours in the Mega Lab, and additional time to hold your email after you leave school. So right now, we hold your email open for 2 years after the after you graduate. I give you time to get your documents off and maintain a relationship with the university. But any time beyond that isn't funded. So funded being the key word for all three answers. But I will say that we take all the suggestions that you guys give us very seriously. We bring all those to the table when we're making the decisions for the next year, because we're budgeted a year in advance, so we have to have a plan. We spend our money on things you guys ask for. So all I can say is that's something that we'll add to the list. And then we have to weigh, it's like squeezing a balloon. We say we're going to reduce this, and then this goes up, or we're going to add more here, and this goes up. So, and I do want, since I got a chance to speak, I do want to commend our editor of the Lasso in a public forum to say how great the paper has been this year. And I also wanted to thank him for pushing forward the issue of using Web 2.0 kind of tools. And his recent article really pushed the last kind of button in marketing department, and they have an official Facebook site that they actually update. So thank you.
Next question.
Why is it that Stark Hall does not, why is it that Stark Hall has curfews but Gwynn Hall doesn't? And the other question is, when will we be able to build more residence halls? Because I know funding is low.
You're learning.
Those are both excellent questions. I'll address the visitation at Stark Hall first. Our visitation policies are largely driven by the student body and approved by the Board of Regents. And Stark Hall and Jones Hall represent less than 50% of our available housing on campus. Two residence halls, Lowry Woods Community and Gwynn Hall, do offer 24-hour visitation. And most of the students who want more visitation are very vocal about wanting more visitation in Stark Hall. But the fact of the matter is that our request for housing in Stark Hall is actually up this year, and many students prefer to have a choice where they don't have 24-hour visitation. And that's an option that we want to continue to provide to our residents. And if you are not satisfied with that, there are avenues to change that. I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago, there was a move by the Stark Hall Council, Hall Council would be the place to begin that. And that move by the Stark Hall Council to extend their visitation hours or to offer 24-hour visitation was actually not approved by the residents of Stark Hall themselves. And since that time, there has not been another student group to bring that forward. There is a process involved with that because it is something that would need to be approved by the Board of Regents. And so it goes through a few steps before we get there. And then in terms of construction of more housing on campus, That would be generated by growth and development of the university. Currently, we're at about 102% of our occupancy, and we don't turn anyone away for housing. And as far as that goes, right now there's not a huge demand for housing or building more housing on campus, simply because of cost. And by the time the spring semester comes around, we have more than enough spaces for students and even offer some privates to students at that time. I know we have more.
Kenny's correct. We are full basically right now. We start the fall semester that way. By the end of the year, we're not full. Housing is a self-supporting operation. The state does not provide it. It is paid for. Both the construction and the operation of housing is paid for entirely by the students who live there. That's true at all universities in Texas. There are no taxpayer dollars, in other words, behind housing. We have done a feasibility study, which is a requirement before you build something of that sort. It's professionally done by an external group. We did one before Lowry Woods was built, and it said we needed more housing. The last feasibility study basically says we're sort of on the edge, that we might need more soon, but we don't quite yet. We will probably replicate that survey again before too long. We probably would not build more residence halls of the traditional type. We would build either more apartments like Lowry Woods or what's called semi-apartment, sort of a suite style. That's the two things most universities are doing. The problem is cost. Since the state does not build housing, it is done by selling bonds. It's like having a mortgage to build a house. It's just a lot larger. Lowry Woods cost us, we had to sell bonds, meaning borrow, approximately $13 million. And it stays full, it is paying for itself. We're able to make the bond payment, like mortgage payments every year. At current construction cost, building another Lowry Woods somewhere else, which is another issue, like where would we put it, would be about $20 million. So you stop and ask, if I want to live in that new place, what would my rent be? Add 30 to 40% on top of what Lowry Woods currently costs. That's the bind we're in right now. It must be paid for by the residents who live there, and can we charge our students that much? Many universities do. You know, our most typical room here is a double room with a private bath. That's the typical arrangement in Gwynn and Stark. We are currently charging our students less than anybody else in the area for that room and about half of what some universities charge for that same room. We could raise the rent and pile up money and build something, and we've chosen not to do that.
Question about commuter services. I know that UNT offers free commuter services from Denton to Dallas, Louisville, and Carrollton for their students, whereas like a TW student costs $5 for us to come here and also to leave to go to the destination. I want to know if somehow TW could get involved in like offering free commuter services for students.
UNT does not offer free services. They charge every student who enrolls a transportation fee. And that pays for it. And TW does not charge a transportation fee. It's paid for by the people who use it. Now, local bus service is free to TW students. But the shuttle back and forth does cost something because we're not charging every student a fee for it. Again, if students want to petition through student government to add a fee, a transportation fee, we can do that. We have the right to, under law currently, to charge that kind of a fee, but we choose not to. They're subsidizing it by charging everyone a fee.
Back on the rooming thing, what's wrong with building more traditional dorm rooms? Like,
Sorry.
What's wrong with building more traditional dorm rooms? Would it be better to build more Lowry Woods type things? Or, I mean, like, because I'm a freshman and I'm stuck in a room with three people. And I'm not allowed to live off campus.
Correct. When I said we would probably build more apartments, that is the preference of more students. We have a requirement for freshmen and sophomores to live on campus or at home with their families. Unless the university grows dramatically at the freshman and sophomore level, we don't need more housing. The demand for housing has been either transfer students coming in or has been students who've already lived on campus, like you, for a while, who want to stay on campus, but they don't want the traditional housing anymore. It is slightly cheaper to build traditional housing that is more Gwynn's and Stark's and the like. So if students want to advise us about that, we can do it. Right now, the feasibility study is saying we're not quite ready for more housing yet.
We have time for one last question.
This summer, I went to the Houston campus for the first time, and I spoke to some Houston students, and they expressed, and to my shock, they expressed that they were very interested in coming here, like, to visit as part of, like, they wanted to feel like part of the TW community. One of them asked me if it was possible for someone to sponsor a bus type thing to maybe ship them over here during homecoming or something. And I thought that was a great idea. Because they're like part of TW, but like they're so far away, right? So I was wondering if there was any thoughts about to help connect the campuses.
You're looking at me for it. Actually, I've never heard that. We actually fund for officers of the Student Government Associations to visit each campus. We have programmed activities where students from the Dallas campus come back and forth. Some students from here have gone to Dallas. I've never heard the request from Houston. Funds to allow students to travel are restricted by the state, and we can't just use any piece of money to do that. But it would be possible, and my answer would be for our student government to talk to the Houston campus student government if that is real. What is it for, how many, when, and see if it could be programmed. There are ways to do that, but I've never heard that one before. CSD will do that next week.
All right, on behalf of the Student Senate, I'd like to thank you all for coming. We'd like to thank our panelists for being great supporters of the Student Senate. And we also like to thank our student guests for joining us as well. If you had any questions that weren't addressed, or if you wanted to, you were too scared to ask your question, we'd like that you write it down and give it to one of the senators, and we'll be sure that it'll be posted on the website so you can get your answer. And also, we hope that you all will join us at our reception in the back. Thank you.